Hello and welcome back to the DebtWired podcast. I'm your host, Laura Gardner, and today we're going to talk about the rise in investment flows that we are seeing from the Middle East into Africa and how this is impacting African economies and their development. To discuss this, we are joined by Claire Matheson-Curtin, who is a partner at White & Case's Global Debt Finance Practice in Dubai. Hi, Claire. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks very much. Lovely to be here.
So, Claire, you wrote about this in December 2022, and you aptly called it the Middle East and Africa corridor. I think since that time, so in the year and a half since you wrote this, I think the trends have become even more prevalent. Before we get into the why, can you tell us a bit more about how much more GCC investment into Africa are we seeing compared to historical levels?
Absolutely. It's a great question. So historically, the relations with the GCC and sub-Saharan Africa existed, but they weren't as significant as other regions of the world. And I think we can point to China as being an obvious example there. Previously, that was Africa's largest inbound investor. Until recently, in 2022 onwards, there's been a retrenchment really from China's position. And what we've seen there is that opportunity taken up by GCC states. And where traditionally those GCC states had the strongest link between North Africa, notably Egypt, probably given the cultural and Arabic speaking connections. But there's been a notable shift to sub-Saharan Africa. And if we look at the figures that you see on FDI, the GCC actually now leads in terms of those headline figures with a notable increase in investment activity. So if we look at the numbers specifically, last year alone, the GCC-based companies had an announcement of, I think it was 73 FDI projects across Africa, which amounted to over $53 billion of investment. And you know, other market figures I've seen have said that this clearly surpasses the individual investments that have been made by the Asian, European and American economies, which I think stand at about $38 billion and $10 billion respectively. So that really does demonstrate the growth of the interest from the GCC into Africa. I think what's interesting is if we unpick that a bit more, an overwhelming majority of those investments that $53 billion figure I gave to you, about 90% of that originates between Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates combined. And I think whilst there is a noticeable uptick from other GCC states as well, so, you know, in early 2023, we saw Agility, the Kuwait-based logistics industrial developer, announce plans to establish data centers in Egypt and Ghana. So we're seeing the other GCC states participate too, but those headline numbers are really coming out of the UAE and Saudi. And I think it's not just limited to sort of ad hoc purchases of strategic assets by state-owned companies. It seems to be a general commitment from private as well as state investment from these countries. And I think that's diplomatic and policy decision too. And I'm sure we'll come on to in a minute talking about the whys and the wherefores. But I think what we've seen is non-oil product trade increase dramatically. So if we look at the UAE and Ethiopia, for example, between 2013 and 2022, there was an increase of 180% in their non-oil product trade. And that surpassed $9 billion. And in 2022 alone, their bilateral trade reached $1.4 billion, which was a twofold increase from 2013. So these are just sort of individual examples, but you can see that the amount of money that actually now is flowing into sub-Saharan Africa from the GC is significant. And I think we're just going to continue to see that, particularly as we've now seen the UAE sign and ratify multiple bilateral investment treaties across Africa. In 2022, in the summer, we saw the UAE and Kenya issue a joint statement on their economic partnership. We've seen in 2023, right at the end of 2023, when Riyadh hosted the Middle East and North Africa Climate Week, and we saw Saudi Arabia sign 5 memoranda of understandings with Nigeria, Ethiopia, Senegal, Chad, and Rwanda as part of its sort of sustainability and cooperation efforts in energy. I think all of that just points from a position of sporadic investment to sub-Saharan Africa with a tendency to support North Africa. I think that now we've seen that quite a dramatic shift across, and I think those figures stack up to show that trend.
Thanks so much, Claire. It's really interesting. Thanks to our audience for listening. And just so you know, you can download or listen to more episodes of DebtWired on Apple or Spotify. And you can also read our stories on debtwired.com. And with that, back to the interview. Why do you think we're seeing this increase recently?
It's quite a big question. And it's pretty multifaceted, really. I mean, I think I mentioned at the beginning China, and that retrenchment from China has obviously made space for new investors and a different investment approach to be taken by various of the sub-Saharan African countries. But at the same time, there's been sort of political and strategic shift from the various GCC nations in their approach to investment, sort of wider than Africa, but also into Africa. And I think we can look at a few factors specifically. And I think the first one is obviously diversification of investment portfolios. And I think that's been quite obvious for a number of years that, you know, the UAE, Saudi, the other GCC countries, they've been actively seeking to diversify themselves away from a dependence on oil and gas. Africa presents lots of opportunities for their investment in renewable energy infrastructure, real estate, telecoms, and also agriculture. So there's not only is there lots of opportunity, but there's also potentially high returns from them from there. That's sort of the diversification angle. If you then think about government initiatives and sort of policy perspective, we talked just now about the various bilateral treaties and sort of trade agreements that have been reached. And there has been a definite shift between governments to promote investment and trade between the regions. And it goes both ways. There's been a remarkable growth in that trade relations. And I think we've seen imports and exports between just the UAE and sub-Saharan Africa surge over 30% in the last decade. And I think Saudi Arabia and sub-Saharan Africa, that the trade between the two of them is now valued at 12 times what it was just 10 years ago. So that's obviously a reason for what's actually adding to the increase. But really, it comes from clear opportunity. So many African countries experiencing what I would say was rapid urbanization and real economic growth needs. There's definitely a demand for infrastructure development across the continent. And I think the GCC investors have a depth of and wealth of experience in sort of construction infrastructure projects, that they are able to see these opportunities to invest and have the funds available to invest in the necessary roads, the ports, the airports, the other critical infrastructure projects that are much needed across the country. I think that's why we're seeing an increase. I think it's a combination of space that's been given, a desire and clear opportunity, all which, you know, have come together to create that perfect sort of intersection between economic opportunity, strategic interest, and I guess a favorable climate where everybody's looking for the same benefits.
You mentioned obviously the China retrenchment, like how, or GCC companies and governments filling in that gap, how is it different? How is that investment different to what African economies might have experienced with China?
That's a good question. I think it's a very different approach, first and foremost. I think what we've seen and what we hear from some of the governments that we talk to is that the approach taken by GCC investors and the GCC governments, in fact, is very commercial. They feel like they're having a very commercial conversation. Interests can be aligned and they can move forward quite quickly and they can execute very quickly. And there is a degree of transparency that is appreciated between those sort of trading conversations and those investment conversations that are being had now.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess to this point, this seems like there's a lot of opportunities for them to meet and a lot of these events that are coming up. Interesting to me was the fact that, well, obviously COP28 was held in the UAE last year. And while it wasn't Africa focused, a lot of these climate financing trades are directed at countries in Africa. So I wonder, what role do you think this played in, I guess, boosting these flows to the continent?
I think COP28 was really interesting. So obviously COP plays a significant role in sort of shaping policies, initiatives globally. And obviously its primary focus is mitigating climate change and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. But the conversations that I had and the platforms that are played out at COP obviously indirectly influences those investment patterns. And when it was held here in the UAE, you know, that stage was set for that increased collaboration and the funding commitments and the policy alignments that we saw were really, really interesting. There was a lot of discussion around green finance, and there was a lot of discussion highlighting the need for collaboration to tackle climate change. And I think the conversation with Africa during COP28 was more significant perhaps than it has been previously. And I think there was a real acknowledgement on that necessity of transitioning away from fossil fuels, but needing investment to help upscale how that can take place across Africa. And I think the GCC states during COP recognized that need to participate in that, to meet the sort of pressing needs effectively. And I think we saw some really interesting developments sort of around and after COP with that. And you know, we saw four UAE entities. There was Masdar, the Abu Dhabi Fund for Development, Etihad Credit Insurance, and AMIA Power jointly pledged $4.5 billion to help Africa advance their clean energy projects. And similarly, we've seen Aqua sign an agreement to invest, I think it was $800 million, establishing a megawatt solar park in the Northern Cape in South Africa. So clearly there was a lot of discussion at COP around that need for collaboration. And I think we will see coming off the back of that, this sort of investment that helps.
Sure, no, absolutely. And I guess that kind of leads to my next question is, where do you expect, you know, the next 12, 24 months, like what do you expect to see more of in terms of industries or sectors? Like what sort of deals do you expect to see happening?
So I think it's really clear that Africa has a vast infrastructure and energy demands. There's an abundant supply of opportunity in that regard. I was reading an article from the African Development Bank that said that the majority of that was going to have to be funded with private sector funding. And if you look at the continent and its infrastructure and finance needs, I think it was estimated by the African Development Bank again that could be up to $170 billion a year by 2025. And that created a gap of about $100 billion a year. So clearly, there's a huge amount of need. And I think it was McKinsey had said that 80% of infrastructure projects in Africa fail at feasibility stage. That's a huge gap, both in funding and capacity. And I think what we've seen from the GCSE is that capacity and ability, both from a funding and actual business perspective, to fulfill that need. So I'm pretty sure that we will see a constant stream of investment into infrastructure. We talked just now about COP, you know, and energy transition is so important, and it's on the forefront of everybody's mind at the moment. I think what's interesting is when we look at the numbers, I think it's 5 out of the top 10 most significant sort of renewable energy players in Africa were from the UAE and the South and Saudi. Aqua Power was sort of leading the pack in that. And I see that continuing, again, from experience and capability and investment opportunities that are being created. I see that continuing. We saw last week the Nigerian Minister of State for Petroleum Resources actually making a call for the UAE investors to invest into Nigeria. He was actually asking for more investment into the oil and gas sector and looking to build strategic partnerships. And I think that just sort of highlights how not only is it investment going into Africa, but also Africa looking actively for partners and actively choosing partners from the GCC. And, you know, that's been really interesting. We've talked a lot about infrastructure and energy. I think it's also really important to acknowledge that Africa has a really youthful and growing population, and it's rapidly urbanizing. And that just leads to an expanding consumer market. And I think what we've seen in some of the trade figures that we mentioned earlier is actually, if you dial into those, there's a huge sector in retail that is burgeoning. And there's a lot of investment going across both ways from the retail sector, but also from the telecoms and emerging technologies markets. I think we'll also see some of those sort of products and investment strategies playing out in the sort of next couple of years.
So no shortage of deal flow and opportunities there. And very interesting to see such a benefit. It seems like a very beneficial partnership, at least. And like you said, both parties really seeking it out. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But I wanted to ask a final question. Do you expect we'll see an increase in Islamic finance across Africa as a result?
I think we should. Whether we will or not, I think it remains to be seen slightly. There are some bigger reasons as to why I think Islamic finance hasn't got off the ground as much as one would expect it could. And some of those are sort of regulatory and legal sort of obstacles that various countries probably need to address before there can be a lot of Islamic investment. But actually, it makes a lot of sense. I guess from an investor perspective, a lot of money coming out of the GCC, there's a lot of liquidity, and a lot of that liquidity needs to be deployed in a Sharia compliant manner. These sort of infrastructure and energy projects are prime examples of, you know, Sharia compliant assets that money can be deployed very easily and very readily. So certainly countries that are willing to sort of widen their thought process about where the liquidity comes from, I think would be very well set up to actually to see a lot of their deals being done with partly or wholly with Sharia compliant financing. It's interesting. You know, I've been tracking this for a long time. I'm really invested in the Islamic finance industry. And it's interesting because we always think that there should be more Islamic finance done across the continent than there is. You know, we have recently seen more demands. There's been Sukuk issuances in Egypt, obviously, but just recently in South Africa. And obviously Nigeria has a fairly robust interest-free finance platform. So it's there. And I think if we can start seeing, and if countries can start seeing Islamic finance as another form of liquidity and readily accepting that, I think that will do wonders for some of these infrastructure projects and that funding gap. So I guess I'm hopeful. To answer your question directly, I'm hopeful, but let's see.
Thank you, Claire. It's been great talking to you today about the Middle East and Africa corridor.
Thanks very much.
And to our audience, thanks again for listening to this episode of DebtWired. I'm your host, Laura Gardner, and we'll see you next time.